Welcome to episode 142 of the never rebooted, never redundant Nerd Extravaganza podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And tonight we bring in a couple of victims in the form of Ivan and Doug of Nine Kingdoms fame. Hello, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Well, you're about to find out what's up as we launch into an in-depth discussion of reboots, particularly reboots of franchises, games, product lines in general, basically when they are warranted, when they are not warranted, whether they are just a shameless way to cash in and or prime the money pump for another round of engorgement of coffers, that sort of thing. So brace yourselves, and I apologize in advance if this was not what you wanted to talk about, because here it comes. But first, we will invite you to participate in a Nerd Extravaganza tradition, which is us going on at nauseating length about the interesting happenings in our lives with our weekly geekly, geekly weekly update, so called because we could not decide if it should be called the weekly geekly update or the geekly weekly update. With all that said, I think we should put you guys on the spot, and I'm going to have Ivan go first, and feel free to answer nothing, in which case this will be kind of short, but feel more free to share with us what you have been up to vis-a-vis geeky things over the past week, let's say.
I've been kind of all consumed with getting videos ready for our Kickstarter. So I've been kind of going to work, doing that, and then shoveling snow and hacking away ice.
That sounds grueling.
It's pretty grueling. The video part is kind of fun. I haven't had a chance to play any games, and I did have to sit down with my 10-year-old daughter and watch Barbie Dreamhouse cartoons.
Wow.
But the good thing about Barbie Dreamhouse cartoons is they did make several references to Raiders of the Lost Ark, one reference to Star Wars, and one to The Simpsons.
Amazing.
Do they have a term for, like, older dudes who are into that show, like they do with bronies, or?
I wouldn't know anything about it.
Kins?
They're called, like, Ken Paws or something. Oh, man. Well, I gotta say, being involved in the Kickstarter is in and of itself highly geeky, and I really like the infiltration of things that appeal to us into the Barbie-verse.
It was surreal, this whole thing, the Indiana Jones reference.
Nice. Well, that sounds like a pretty full week. If you have nothing else, I will pass the conch to Doug.
So the geekiest thing I've been doing is trying to figure out how to shorten colds. But, yeah, I've gotten to play a couple games before the Super Bowl. Had some couple people over. We played Poop by Feels Right Design. Little party game there. And then, of course, Legendary, which I play twice a week with my wife because it's her favorite game in all of the land. So, other than that, not a whole lot of geekiness going on. It's midterm season at high school where I teach, so grading, and explaining to kids why they can't make up an assignment that was due, like, 8 weeks ago.
Kids after my own heart. And I just want to offer my insights here. Trying to cure colds faster with the internet is pretty much the epitome of nerdiness, in my opinion. So, well done.
And prepping to go to Unplug this weekend. So.
Do tell. Please enlighten me as to what that is.
So Unplug is a network of organized sort of playtest event. And this is the fifth year they've run it. It's going to be the first year at a convention center. It used to be held at a high school gymnasium. So this will be much nicer. But it's just a bunch of geeks getting together and playing games and testing out unpublished designs. So I went last year and it was amazing. And this year I'm Dragon Hiving. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
Wish I could be there. Cool. Well, I don't know if any of us are going to Unpub, but if that concludes your update, maybe I will toss it over to the regulars on the show. And how about you, Brian? You hitting up Unpub? What you got going on?
No Unpub for me. I'm very excited to say that my Harbor Kickstarter came in, though. I don't know what TMG stands for, actually, but TMG Games, the G might be a games, so maybe I'm saying games. TMG is one of my favorite manufacturers lately. I just love everything they do.
Did you say you received that in, or you backed something?
No, it came in.
Okay, awesome. And impressed with the product?
Impressed with the product. It looks like a lot of fun, and they package so carefully. They have just the nice, sturdy boxes, nice, sturdy cards, no wasted space. It's not a huge box that I can't carry around, but everything fits perfectly. I love it.
Cool. An ode to packaging. I love that. Anything else?
I snuck in my, let's see, sixth introductory game of Crossmaster Arena.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
One of these days, one of these introductions will stick, and I'll actually remember how to play the game the next time. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too, as I am the person who has reintroduced it about six times. So I'd like it if we actually learned how to play the game and then moved on to more advanced rules. Cool. Anything else? Or otherwise, I'm going to pass it along.
Pass away.
Chris, what's up with you, man?
Well, I got pretty geeky this week. One thing I did is I discovered a really cool website, Public Domain Superheroes, or pdsh.wika.com. Basically, it's all the pulp heroes that are in the public domain. So this, if you were felt inspired, you could grab one of these characters and create your own comic book or short story or novel. There were some pretty interesting ones there. Believe it or not, the original Spider is considered open domain still. The one that inspired Spider-Man and, Stan Lee back in the day. I also looked into Save the Sci-Fi. It's a Kickstarter where they're going to do a yearly subscription, and they're going to find a lot of the older lost sci-fi stuff and try to bring it back to the masses before it gets lost for forever in pulp magazines. And I also was on Fancy Pants Me. I was on Kirkus Reviews reading basically The Rise of the Paperback Novel, which educated me on two things I didn't know before, which was back in the day before the paperback novel, just the idea of reading a hardback book was pretty much the 1%. Everyone else read everything from magazines. And also the impression I got was the whole idea of someone writing a book and making millions and millions off of it didn't exist until the paperback novel popped up. So now that the paperback novel is kind of dead, maybe that time is kind of gone, which was kind of a sad thing.
Oh, I don't know. I think we're returning to a less vulgar time where people can't get filthy rich anymore. As, like, everybody here is an author of some sort. Very interesting. And so you say I can grab any public domain character and run with it, like Aaron Burr, for example, one of my heroes?
If it's a public domain, yeah, sure. In fact, Sherlock Holmes kind of fits in a funny gray area like that, and there is some sort of organization that is pushing to say that they have the license to it. And a lot of people play nice with those guys, but some people push it as well. It's one of the reasons why a lot of the same characters keep coming up is because they're public domain versus franchise stuff. Now that I mention it, I'm trying to think what type of characters. I mean, like Frankenstein's monster is a public domain character.
Well, I'm not really sure Aaron Burr is, and I was kidding about Aaron Burr being a hero of mine. Okay. So.
Good dueler, I hear.
Yeah, so I've been told. but that said, Chris, does that conclude your update? Because I'm going to toss it over to Cam now, if it does.
Yep.
All right, Cam. Shoot. Huh? Got it?
Got it. I was trying to ignore it, but... No, good week. You know, just work, play, you know, all that good stuff. A lot of games. Of course, at the Adventure Game Store, our weekly game night, Thursday night. Played some fun games. Got to play our co-hosts, our special guests, Doug and Ivan's, one of their new games, which I really enjoyed. Finally got to play Kingsport Festival, which is Kingsburg with a Cthulhu theme. Really love that. Really like that game. I got a Kickstarter in that I backed the One Night Werewolf Daybreak expansion. That came in this week. I'm excited to play that this week at our game night. And other than that, you know, not very geeky, but watched the Super Bowl and ate too much and drank too much like the rest of the country.
Well done. And a perfect segue into my update. I have decided in honor of the Super Bowl that I'm done with geeky pursuits. I've been hitting the gym. I've been pumping the whey protein powder and beating people up, stuffing them in lockers and stuff. Watched the Super Bowl. I was well on my way to becoming a stereotypical jock. when I showed up at the Falcon Pub and played some games with you guys, some tabletop games while watching the Super Bowl, which promptly derailed me from that course. So I'll be on the show for a while yet and continue to do nerdy things. Also, as Brian mentioned, play a little Crossmaster at our game night. And also updated the operating system on all my Apple computers, which is, of course, making me just want to do a full hardware refresh on everything I own, Apple or otherwise. Never a good thing. That's pretty much it.
You are our puppet, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you. I do try. And with all that done, that concludes my update. And typically, this is where we transition into our news extravaganza, the imaginatively named news portion of our introductory segment. And I think I will toss it over to Ivan and Doug, who I'm sure in tandem can share the news about the game we demoed that we have alluded to, or rather that Cam alluded to. Why don't you guys take it away if you want to divulge anything about that?
Sure, go ahead, Ivan.
You guys did play it, and I gotta say, I always don't know whether to describe it as a board game or a card game. It's kind of both. It's got the elements of a board game because obviously you're moving, you have hex tokens and a hex board here. You have this squad of mythological flying creatures that you're moving around the board fighting with. But really all the meat of the game takes place with the cards. So for anyone who hasn't seen it or looked at it online, you play a group of titans. Titans can be there's the dragon, the pegasus, the manticore, and the griffin. And you can form each of those, and there's a unique, very unique titans. And you get a card for each titan, and then you have what we call maneuver cards that you can play and enhance your movement combat abilities. So it has a lot of the elements of like a customizable card game, although it's not like the kind of game where you go out and buy packs. It's not collectible. But it has a lot of the elements customizable card game where you can take the game and you can sort of redefine which maneuver cards you use and which groups of titans you use.
And of course we're talking about your guys' new game, Titans of Empyrean, which yeah, we did demo, and I was the dragon faction, and I'm curious to know, you alluded to the little hexagon pieces. I know you had just sent us a prototype, but do you ever envision in the future maybe having miniatures?
We went back and forth on that, and we've been going back and forth on that since we first developed the game a year ago. And the truth is, you're talking about we would need individual molds. It would just blow the game way out of proportion. We'd love to do miniatures. The other issue is, when you guys played the game, did you have collisions during the game?
Oh, yes. Yeah, every turn.
It's tough to stack miniatures when they collide.
Right.
So what we ideally, we're probably going to, in the initial offering, poker chip stackable tokens would be great. Miniatures would sort of be a high-level special edition kind of thing.
Hmm.
We look forward to you sending those to us as well. Just kidding.
You raise a good point, because we were colliding like fools, and now that I think about it, that would make for a messy pile of miniatures, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we actually talked about having a combination of tokens and miniatures, so if you did have a collision, you could just stack one under like a miniature, but it would get messy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think at one point there was like four titans stacked in one of the hexes.
We were weighing the odds of acceptable losses.
That's what the game is all about. It's really weighing the odds of acceptable losses and sort of, you know, throwing a titan into a kamikaze run to really take down two other guys.
Yeah, weighing losses is exactly the way I'd characterize it, because, like, do I really want to preserve this guy? Is it worth the resource expenditure required to keep this particular unit in the game, you know, this particular titan in the game, right?
Yes, exactly.
Cool. I bet to, now, did I mischaracterize the game as yours together? I didn't mean to exclude Doug when I asked for a news update, and then he immediately tossed it over to to you.
So Nike is the company producing it. It is our company. Doug and a couple others, and I
except that it's my game, is I was the original designer of the game.
Okay.
It is my design and you know, build a set, but obviously we work together as a company to develop the game and to iron out the kinks, and of course, Doug actually came into the company midway through its development, but he spearheaded the development of the Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
And you know, you look at a game, and so it's my design, but in order to get the game out there, it's a team effort that I definitely don't consider it my game.
Okay, cool. Doug, did you have something to add then? It was a collective news update, and I feel like I may have given you the short end of the stick.
That's totally all right. Next time we come on here, if we're talking about something that I mainly designed, then I'll just talk over iPad. Wow! Way to throw me into the bus. I'm talking. All right, I'm out. Take care. No, I mean, I think he summed it up. It's the kind of game. I mean, your last game too. I mean, it's like this apocalypse is really, you know, a game of acceptable losses. How much do I want to hold on to this? And usually, especially in apocalypse, the answer is do not hold on to it, kill it. But yeah, it's been a blast to work on a game that even before I joined the company, I played a couple times and really, really liked it. So it's been cool to come on board with that.
Yeah, I think that was the general consensus. We played it and I think we all really liked it. Once we figured it out, it took a while for us to sort of, you know, get, you know, on the same page. And then once we did, we had a lot of fun attacking each other and just jumping on top, piling on top of each other.
Yeah, I had a favorable opinion for sure coming out of it.
That's great. Glad to hear it. Yeah, it's done pretty well. We played it at Gen Con last year and it was almost universally well liked. A couple people have trouble with some of the rules, like you said. There are a few things in there that I would characterize as counterintuitive, maybe, based on what I've seen in other board games. That is also one of my signatures, is to make some counterintuitive rules for people, throw some curveballs at the players.
I would say, yeah, I don't know if I would characterize it as counterintuitive, but there were some, like, eyebrow raising, like, oh boy, next time I play this, you know, I'll be careful of X, Y, and Z. I had a few moments like that. For example, you know, facing my units, like, to collide immediately with nearby units seemed like just a wonderful notion at the outset. But proved not to be such a great notion after all.
Yeah, and there are subtle differences between each of the species, so you really can't, like the manticores, for example, will burn cards really quickly. If you don't play them carefully, they can be really powerful, but they'll burn through cards, and then all of a sudden, you know, you did this splash damage at the beginning of the game, and you're just left with nothing, and it kind of utterly decimated your opponent. You really, really have nothing left to do.
Yeah, you pulled a Japanese Pacific War strategy. cool. So, anything else news related you guys want to share with us before we greedily take back the floor?
The news is basically just about the weather at this point.
It's sunny and beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, but
it really highlights the whole white covering of the entire city.
We are all based in Florida, so we cannot sympathize with you, I'm afraid.
Feel our envy.
Well, don't be too envious. We do have a really long Africa-like summer to look forward to in a few months, so there's that.
And alligators.
Yeah, they're a plague. I mean, they are. I had to shoo one out of my house today. My God. All right. Then with that all covered, I will pop over to Chris. Chris, you got any exciting news for us in the news extravaganza segment?
Yep. Just give me a second.
Okay, no news from Chris.
Yeah, I've got two bits of news. There's a new documentary called Fight for Space. Basically, it's trying to put out the word about all the stuff that NASA has done and its spin-off technologies, kind of as a counterpoint to a lot of people who think that NASA's funding is a waste of money and time.
It is. We got potholes to take care of. Screw NASA.
That's right. That's right. And then the big news for a lot of people, especially, it's funny enough, Tom, since you mentioned that a lot of us are writers, the Science Fiction Writers Association, also known as SIFWA for the hardcore type, has opened up membership to indie publishing and also self-published writers. If you put a novel out there on Amazon and you can prove that it has made $3,000, I guess, in a year, it didn't really give a time frame in the press release, you can give them proof and you can become a member of SIFWA.
SIFWA. It sounds like a little bit like something you might catch in Vegas on a rough weekend.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
One would hope, right?
Ask your doctor if you have SIFWA.
Exactly.
And if you do, don't touch anyone.
Oh. So are you a member of SIFWA now?
Oh, me? No. I'm still working on just getting lunch money out of my self-published stuff right now.
I tried to join the Screen Actors Guild because I gave a presentation at work today. It turns out you don't get like a SAG credit or token or whatever for doing work presentations.
You don't?
No, I did a great job too, I felt, but whatever. Hammed it up. Useless. That's an aside, though. Did you have more news, sir, or should I go
that's
on
it.
At length?
Keeping it short and sweet this week.
Awesome. How about you, Cam? Got any news to share?
Yes, I do. I think it's very fitting since we have a couple of teachers on the show tonight with us, and I am also a professor at one of the local law schools here down in South Florida. Richard Dawkins, I don't know if you guys know who he is.
Yes.
Of Oxford fame and biology and his very staunch atheism, et cetera, et cetera. I guess this week he's on YouTube, he's reading his hate mail from, I guess, fundamentalists and all the people who are sending him hate mail on a daily basis. And it's really, really funny. If you haven't checked it out, I would go over and check that out. He just reads it, with all the curse words and all. It's a riot. Mm. So I would check that out. Game of Thrones trailer came out this week for season 5. Pretty excited about that. I know a lot of us here on the show are big Lego fans. They had two huge projects that they just came out with this week. One is a shield helicarrier, which is amazing, and it's like 30 inches long. But then they one-upped themselves a day or two later by unveiling the Enterprise, and it is like 4 feet long. It's a gargantuan. It's a huge Star Trek Enterprise Lego set that you can put together. 18,000 pieces. It's the original Kirk's USS Enterprise. Oh, 5 feet long. I'm sorry, I misspoke. Not 4 feet, 5 feet long. And last but not least, I don't know if anyone out there, I don't think any of us do, because, we haven't gotten those royalty checks from Google yet. But BMW drivers need to patch their onboard computer system, because apparently if you're a hacker of any note or any kind of skill, you can basically steal the newer model BMWs with your cell phone. So if you own a BMW, I would contact them immediately and get the patch for your onboard navigation system.
And if you don't, get that software on your cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you want a BMW, use your cell phone. That's about it for me.
Okay, so the moral of that story, get a BMW with the Lizard Squad protection package or kiss your car goodbye.
Pretty much.
My 15 minutes of fame is our minutes would be our right plural yeah are in the offing because Dawkins will soon be reading my lengthy tirade and boy I can't wait. That means it is Brian's turn.
Oh, I thought you skipped me on purpose. I got nothing.
Yeah, no news. That's good news.
No news is good news.
Yes. As usual, I refrain from sharing news because I spend most of my time commenting on everyone else's, and I will keep a tradition so that we might press on with this episode and get into the real meat and taters, which I will kind of hand over to Chris on because, Chris, you this was a topic near and dear to your heart, specifically reboots, specifically when they're appropriate, when they're not. when they are impactful, when they're not, maybe when they are a shameless cash grab, what have you. So rather than let me put words in your mouth, why don't we reboot this segue and let you talk about this topic and where you want to go with it?
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Well, let me restart. And I'd like to play a little game while we have our discussion, because I think there's like three types of reboot. There's the reinventing, which I think Doctor Who, Bond, the TV show Fringe exemplify. And this is what they do is they don't really reboot, but they introduce a new character or they introduce a new scenario to kind of reinvent the series or the franchise. And then I think there's also just the straight up reboot. All the Spider-Man movies so far have pretty much been straight up reboots. Then I think there's, you know, the very far left field of what reboots are, the reimaginings, like Battlestar Galactica is a perfect example of a reimagining. They're the ones that kind of started that whole concept of it's a reimagining. You know, like I said, we get talking if we want to play a little game and see what we can classify as a reboot or reinventing or, you know, a reimagining. So what brought it up to me was, or what motivated me is, I know about three big franchises that literally have 30 years of history to them. When I say 30 years of history, I mean it has literally been a generation of creative types making history and stories in these franchises. And it's Star Wars, Star Trek, and one that's not as well known, but it's called BattleTech, if that rings a bell with anybody.
BattleTech is the
miniature.
Yeah, actually, it kind of is a little bit like Titans in that it is a not exactly a war game, not exactly a board game, but you have miniatures, you have hexes, and, you know, you maneuver things on the board, though they use dice, not cards. But, you know, the other two, the big ones, they've just recently rebooted themselves one way or the other. Star Wars, what they've done is they've put out a press release saying that all of the extended universe is now going to be basically inspiration for what they're doing. So, you know, I think it would be like, you know, it'd be kind of a more of a reboot because they're kind of also introducing the old characters and passing on the baton to the new characters.
Ivan, was that you who asked that question as to whether it's, are you saying maybe it's not? Because I think with episode 7 and the EU kind of jettisoning, is it not sort of?
Reboot, I think of you retelling the original story in some way.
Mm.
And Star Wars is not. Star Wars is continuing. I know that they sort of put all that expanded universe stuff on the shelf, but that's, you know, just taking stuff out of canon and still continuing on, it doesn't necessarily strike me as a reboot. It's not that I don't think it belongs in the conversation, but it absolutely does. But it might actually be sort of fourth category of this sort of...
Or would you say more of a reinventing?
I don't know. It's very strange. Like, what would you consider the fourth Indiana Jones movie?
Crystal Skull? Yeah, I was going to say, terrible.
Does not exist.
Train wreck.
So I'm not going to have that conversation because I'm actually the world that likes that. But it's a continuation. It doesn't retell Raiders, and it doesn't reintroduce the character, and I don't think the Star Wars Episode 7 is... Seven is going to do any of that either. So it's more of a continuation.
You know, I'm leaning more towards reinventing. Part of it because, like Doctor Who, that's what they do is they introduce a new character. But the story is a continuation. But they do something that puts a spin on it so it gets a new lease on life. It's like a soft reboot.
It's a little bit different than Doctor Who, though.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, because Doctor Who will acknowledge the show's past and the prior iterations of the Doctor. There's, in this case, they're sort of streamlining and rebooting the underlying lore. And because they haven't really canonized a lot of this stuff in film, which is the gold standard, so they're able to do that. And they don't have a history of having a lot of this stuff on film. So, yeah, it's there are parallels there, but it's somewhat different. But I guess it would fall under your reinventing category as you've defined it, now that I think about it.
Or re-canonization or something?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, we can add it. Hey, this is not set in stone. I'm pulling it all out of my nether regions, so I can add a fourth category. I just hadn't mentioned it yet, but funny enough, it does sound like recanonization.
Yes, indeed.
I hate to be the EU guy in every single conversation, but I guess I am.
But you're our the guy.
Yeah, yeah. I loved the EU, and I hated it at first, like the idea of them getting rid of it, but I have to admit, I kind of like how they did it, because they're basically calling it Star Wars Legends, and their spin is all of those stories were like campfire stories. Those are things that like got told in bars about what happened. So maybe all of that stuff happened, but not exactly like it. So I think that's evidence for reimagination.
Hmm. No, I think it's genius because it lets them use the EU as is for the old fans who still want more stories in there if they think there's a market for that. And it still lets them move forward and not be straitjacketed by 30 years of fluff that really wasn't set out straight in the beginning. I mean, I'm going to detour for a second because I think there's a life cycle to most of these franchises. Basically, no one really expects – they hope to have a franchise, but in their heart they really don't expect it. So they don't really go the extra mile they need to lay down that track to have
– Just J.K. Rowling.
Except for her, right. But isn't it like the third successful movie or maybe, the third season, third TV season where suddenly somebody goes, holy crap, we have a franchise, let's go with it. But by then the continuity damage has already been done. You know, and before that, they try, testing off spin-off fiction and shows, but it's always done on the quick, on the cheap, because they don't really have faith in it as a franchise yet. And that's where some of those inconsistencies start. And for me, I think internal consistency is going to be probably more important than a quote-unquote realism with the real world. I mean, a perfect example of that, speaking of Star Wars, if we're ever going to get off that, not that I'm in a rush to, but we could spend all night on Star Wars, is... internal consistency. Force as some sort of, kind of cool mystic religion thing, or now suddenly it's true science fiction with midichlorians. Exactly, yeah. exactly.
Well, internal consistency has never been one of the strengths of Star Wars. George Lucas likes to rewrite himself pretty much throughout the course of every movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and in addition to that, Splitter in Mind's Eye, I mean, that was done with just out there in the middle of nowhere, and they said that's great, and they put rubber stamped it and put it out there, and now it's not even remotely canon. I actually read that book.
I just like the idea of Greedo in a bar telling EU stories.
Oh God, I the only thing that can make that worse is the CG band from Jabba's Palace playing at that bar. And
I am like a 1,000% on board with that because it would explain the discrepancies between who shot first. Greedo's just lying about it.
That makes it sound a little more palatable, Brian, but I'm just imagining stories about like light nunchucks and like Ewok Jedi and also whatever other EU horrors might be conjured up.
Dude, that's only when the storyteller gets more and more drunk.
Exactly.
And now our guest co-hosts know why we do this every week.
Indeed. Did you want to move away from Star Wars at all, Chris?
I mean, I don't want to have to drag everybody if we're having fun here. But, I mean, what would you guys classify Star Trek as then? Because they're now in an alternate reality with a alternate timeline.
This is also a very clever way to reboot the series.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
String Theory counts as a reboot, though, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that was a total reboot and a really cleverly well done one that paid homage to the original without necessarily being wedded to it. And now they can do whatever they want in this parallel universe. It's sort of like Marvel did with the Ultimate series, and then what they're going to do with Soul Secret Wars thing is probably going to be a disaster.
Oh, I'm slapping myself on the forehead. I forgot to even think about the Marvel stuff that's coming up.
Oh, man.
So, Brian, Tom, Cam, you weighing in on Marvel?
I'll weigh in first on Star Trek and say that, yeah, I like the way they handled that. And the kind of way more action sci-fi direction they went in aside, it's cool because they're not trampling on next gen and things that I love. Marvel, I have a superficial relationship with. I know certain characters, certain series in the Marvel Universe that I care about. Namely Nightcrawler, who has not been prominently featured in some time in any Marvel movie.
Preach it, brother. Preach it.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad I don't have a close relationship with Marvel, because as an ignorant like movie fan, I'm enjoying everything they're doing. I know some deep readers of Marvel fiction are not exactly thrilled about some of the directions in which they're going, so I will leave my opinions at that. I suspect we have people with more passionate views.
I mean, for the movies, it's sort of like that is a reboot. Like, they're doing, this is a whole different universe that they're working in now, so it's just a different story. Like, if they were telling the same things over and over again, how boring would that be? Mm-hmm. I want them to diverge more. I want it to be like, hey, Bruce Banner isn't the Hulk, he's now Iron Man.
Well, they call it the cinematic universe, don't they? It is separate. So is anybody here like a diehard Marvel person who doesn't approve of what they're doing? Or
I'm 100%.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a diehard Marvel person, but I mean, I just hate that because of the different licensing rights, and we've spoke about this at length many on previous shows. Like perfect example, Avengers Age of Ultron coming up. You're leaving out so many characters that were in the original story arc of the comic books. So like, I'm kind of worried. I mean, I'm not against it, but I'm kind of worried about how it's going to be treated because it's going to be so different, I think.
Are you speaking of the different rights holders asserting those rights and not wanting to play nice with the others, Cam? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember who owns the rights to like to Wolverine and the mutants or whatever, but then
that would be Fox.
Fox. Yeah. So those guys aren't going to be in the Avengers movie, even though they were in the comic books. What do? Are you just going to make up other people and just kind of throw them in like Turiel? Or, I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, the trailers look cool, and they always look cool, and, you know, everything I've read about it looks okay, but, I mean, it's going to be, as Chris has sort of termed it, I think, a reimagining.
They should just use Rogan the Badger with, like, a goatee.
I'll say this again. I don't have a deep knowledge. Disney like crapped out a movie based on some obscure characters in an obscure comic line, and it outclassed a lot of what the other studios are doing with big name properties. Of course, referring to Guardians, in my opinion, outshining a lot of the Spider-Man movies at the very least. Right?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Big Hero 6.
No, whoa, I would never, I love that movie.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
But actually, is also an example of an obscure comic brought to the fore, right?
Exactly. And it's not even, yeah, that would definitely be in the reimagining part. I think the only real thing is they're superheroes, and the main star is a kid with his robot. So, in fact, funny you should mention Wolverine, because I think like one of the good guys on that is Silver Samurai, who is in the Wolverine movie as a villain, so. All sorts of continuity confusion would abound if you could get everything together again.
Yeah, in the most recent movie, he's a bad guy.
Doug and Ivan, do you guys have any favorite series or properties near and dear to your heart, maybe even not movie-related, anything that comes to mind that have been reinvented, rebooted, or reimagined, either to your liking or otherwise, that you'd want to bring up?
I grew up reading Marvel, mostly X-Men, and so they've been... sort of Magneto's a good guy, now he's a bad guy, now he's a good guy, now he's a bad guy. So that sort of, like you were talking about internal inconsistency before, it gets a little bit old. And I've read Marvel here and there. I have some friends who are more into it, so every once in a while I'll, borrow theirs and read it. But I'm a little anxious about the whole, resetting the whole universe thing that it seems like they're building towards with this thing that's going to happen in May. It could be cool, it could be horrible, it's a sort of like wait and see thing. I would say of all the franchises, that at this point, probably the one I'm most involved with. I was a huge, huge Star Wars fan when I was a kid. Episode 1 was painful. I think I've told Ivan the story, but I was like a goody two-shoes kid. Like, in college, people called me Richie Cunningham. Like, and the one day of school I ever skipped was to go see Star Wars. And I bought like tickets ahead of time. I got like a 10 a.m. show and then like a 4 p.m. show for like my friends who weren't willing to skip school. Went to the 10 a.m. like by myself with a big popcorn and was like, oh my God, what did I just watch? And then all of my friends, like went back to school and they were like, so how was it? I was like, we'll go, I need to see it again, because I didn't want to, like, ruin it for him. I've been burned in the past. The whole reimagining thing. Once been quite shy, I guess.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And Brian and I share an eerily similar story, I think. Right, Brian?
Yeah. Ugh. It was actually gray and drizzling when we left the theater.
Right, you went on a sunny day and it was like depressingly rainy when we left.
When I saw The Phantom Menace for the first time and I walked out of theater, I thought, that was better than I expected it to be.
Oh my god, what were you expecting? Like Schindler's List or something? Depressing? Or...
I really was expecting water.
Jar Jar all the time.
Well, see, now that, I don't think anything could have prepared me for Jar Jar. You know, I never really had a big problem with the Ewoks. There is no, like, Jedi Ewoks would be better than Jar Jar. So I already had an issue with Star Wars going in because I had made the mistake of, before the movie, reading the back of the package of the C-3PO action figure, and it said how Anakin had built him. Mm. Right there, that level of inconsistency. But I went in and actually thought some of the sequences were very cool. And I was entertained more than I thought I would be. So I walked out feeling it was much better than I expected. But still, it wasn't a good movie. It just really wasn't a good movie. For me, the biggest reboot has been Star Trek. Because I grew up with the original series. And I watched Next Generation. And I followed it through its evolution. Actually, I lost touch with Deep Space Nine, which I caught up on recently. I started playing the Attack Wing game. Deep Space Nine was terrible in the first couple of seasons. That's when I stopped watching it, but in the later seasons it got really good. And then, so I watched Star Trek sort of get very, very good and then start to decline. And when they rebooted, for a long time I had been saying that the only way to save Star Trek is to recast and re-crew. And when J.J. Abrams did it, I thought he did a phenomenal job. So I was really happy with that. Because I've seen so many franchises destroyed, not necessarily with reimaginings, but just with poor sequels.
Yeah, yeah. You beating a dead horse almost, right?
So, yeah, talking about Star Trek's decline, do you think that's what really hampered the Enterprise TV show? Was it was straitjacketed in 30 years of continuity? He said with a leading question.
So, again, with I didn't watch Enterprise when it aired. I had actually watched it about a year ago, and I didn't get very far. Got about 6 or 7 episodes in, and what I found about Enterprise was I thought that I liked the cast, and I actually did like the characters, but I thought the stories were very, very flat, and it was hard for me to get interested in it. I know that later on they go into this whole mirror universe thing, and they sort of stomp all over Star Trek continuity, and then somewhere they decide that it was an alternate universe to begin with. I don't know if I'm getting all that right.
Yeah, the show starts off with someone from the future saying, "Congratulations, you're involved in a temporal Cold War," which all smelled of, like, you know, rewrite at the end sort of thing.
There are things you can do even with 30 years of continuity. The trouble with Enterprise, of course, if you go back and you try to create something before that 30 years, that creates real issues that you want to use. Like, they wanted to use the Romulans, and that, you know, in Star Trek, the Romulans hadn't even been heard from in, like, 100 years. So, there's all sorts of stuff that can present obstacles. So, I thought that when Abrams redid Star Trek, he really had the right idea about what to do with it.
I just can't wait till we start using gold press latinum as our monetary system.
You don't find the new movies to be a little too action-focused? That's kind of a common complaint I hear.
The Onion did a story on that, actually. And it was actually a joke. They were like, yeah, well, it can't be Star Trek. There's not a whole half-hour boardroom scene.
You talk about, you can spend the entire episode talking about Star Wars. I could spend the entire month talking about Star Trek.
And neither one would be wrong, sir. Neither one would be wrong.
That whole boardroom scene. That came about with Next Generation and later.
Mm-hmm.
The original Star Trek was, especially for the time, fairly action-packed. I mean, there were fight scenes in every show. They pushed the limits of what they could do, you know, on set with their budgets. So I do think, you know, that Star Trek movies really do go back to that. I mean, granted, you have so much more you can do on screen and with today's special effects, but I think, relatively speaking, it's very true.
That's an interesting perspective. And, you know, I enjoyed the boardroom scenes, as we're calling them, and, like, Next Generation and stuff. Like, I actually enjoyed a lot of the dialogue and, like, scientific, like, babble that went on in those meetings.
Me too.
But I would say it maybe got a little too far, like, in C-SPAN 9. I mean, Deep Space 9. and they needed to throw some action back in. So you can go too far in the other direction for sure.
Yeah, and I think in Next Generation, I mean, a lot of that was driven by Patrick Stewart. I mean, he's just a phenomenal actor, so it wasn't as bad as if you would have had someone else in there, I think.
Right, agreed.
So that kind of gets into the next level of the question is when do you think, especially when something's getting 30 years old, when do you think it should be rebooted? I mean, some of the things I thought about when people want to do reboots, you know, higher up on the Suits level, not you know, us here on the podcast, is like, you know, the actors are getting too old. They're trying to aim for the nostalgia market, or they want to update the special effects, or maybe they want to update the sensibilities because how it feels now is dated and cheesy, or, you know, just a cash grab.
Well, I think Star Trek is a perfect case study in that, because I think they did sort of both. Like, when you had sort of the handoff in Generations, I'm speaking about the film movie Generations, from, you know, the old cast from the original series to the new cast, they were sort of trying to pass the torch. Then, you know, after those, even after they, because, you know, they knew that the later original cast movies were horrible and they were flopping, and so they said, okay, let's move on to the new cast of Next Generation and start making movies with them. And then those movies were pretty not so good either. And then they just threw their hands up and said, all right, well, fuck it, let's reboot, you know? And then, you know, they got the new young hot guys and put them in there and young girls, young guys, and tried to reboot it for a whole new audience. And I mean, I think they finally struck gold there, but, you know, I think 30 years is probably more than long enough.
You got the hard part right, man. I've never wanted to be Uhura's earpiece so much as in this, this series.
Yeah, she's pretty cute.
I think this whole rebooting industry, I mean, if you go back when all of these were new, weren't really rebooting anything. They redid King Kong, you know, after 40 years. And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was terrible. The dude, why? Maybe I'll get crucified for saying this, but 80 years later, I still think it would be old enough.
I wouldn't disagree.
What a... just mind-blowing movie, especially given when it was made.
You mean you didn't like Jack Black in the most recent one?
No, it's funny. I liked a lot, and I didn't have a problem with Jack Black. A lot of people do. I thought he sort of took the character. He made him really sleazy.
Yeah.
Sleazy in the original movie. He was just, you know, he had stars in his eyes, but he wasn't sleazy. But yeah, like, this whole thing is in sequels. Like, they weren't doing sequels back then. Started for the most part in the 70s and the 80s because there was money in it. I think nowadays you have, you know, producers that are afraid to do anything that doesn't already have a built-in audience. So everything's a sequel or a reboot or coming out of a book.
Amen.
Well, you had sequels back in the day, you know, the Revenge of the Son of Frankenstein and stuff like that. But yes, I mean, you're for sure. Right. And of course there were 80,000 Godzilla movies back then. So I had. You're right, it wasn't this prevalent. I mean, starting in the 80s, anything that was mildly successful at box office got a sequel.
I see where you're going with this, and in the back of my mind, I'm always imagining, like, you know, you've got your, like, artistic guy who wants to make a film wearing his beret and scarf, and then you've got, like, the cigar-chopping, like, businessman. You're making a sequel to this, and that's all there is to it. We need, money in the bank, like, you know.
Memento Part 2.
Exactly.
I think we already seen a case of that just wrap up recently, right?
Memento Part 2?
No. So the suit said, you're going to make this a sequel. You're going to make this three movies. And Peter Jackson went,
Hobbit.
Out of there. Oh, God. Now see here, Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's, okay, I'm going to need to shy away from Hobbit. That hurt. Let's shire away from that, please.
Ooh.
I can't be Ornid anymore. No, well, that was a bad. I was trying to say bear. Never mind.
I baited the bear. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Brutal. Actually, great example of a, I won't say a reimagining, but an inflation, an unnecessary inflation of what was just a very simple yet compelling tale in the original Hobbit book. And I understand a lot of the stuff was drawn from unfinished tales and the Silmarillion and the lore that Tolkien created. But man, that was a reimagination that I could have done without.
You mean the whole third movie?
The whole trilogy, honestly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Any opinions on that? Are you guys Hobbit fans? Did you watch the Hobbit movies? Did you like them?
I read the book ages ago, and I remember liking the book a lot, but I couldn't sit through, they were like 2.5 hours each.
Yes.
Yep.
7.5 hours of what is basically like a 300-page book.
Yes, exactly.
I couldn't do it, you know, even with Lord of the Rings trilogy, which the movies seem to get longer and longer, and they played on screen like the books read, and it just seemed like they were so dense, it was so much.
I saw the Lord of the Rings trilogy in theaters and hated it. I mean, just was bored. The end of the third one where it's like fade to black, and I was like, oh, thank God it's over. They did that like 5 times, and they faded to white. And I was like, okay, good, that's it. And then they came back. I think it was Clerks 2 about that. Everything in that movie walks. It's just a movie about walking.
Interestingly, I welcomed the length of those movies because I liked the amount of detail Tolkien lavished on the scenes in those books. I did not welcome anything like that length in what was a related but completely different work in The Hobbit. Brian, maybe you want to weigh in on this one too. Lord of the Rings, you could see why they felt justified in like 26 hours of movie, even if most people probably couldn't sit through it. Hobbit, not so much. I mean, it's kind of like taking a Curious George book and turning it into like a 15-part series.
I don't even blame that. There was plenty of great source materials they could have used. They just decided not to.
And just decided to throw in their own shit. Like, you make things up.
Making people up. Like, Curious George has, like, a girl who, Curious Georgina who joins the cast. Like, why?
Yeah.
How did the man in the yellow hat get his yellow hat?
Right. The wizard in the green hat has something to say about that. Oh.
Before I forget, what do you guys think of the rumors of the new Indiana Jones flick? With Chris Pratt.
With Chris Pratt? Yeah.
I will watch Chris Pratt in anything. I haven't actually heard about it.
You said you will or you will not watch Chris Pratt in anything?
Absolutely will watch him.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't know. I'm tempted to skip Jurassic whatever it is.
Jurassic
no.
World or whatever.
No, that's going to be good.
Even if it's bad, it's going to be good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Trains, velociraptors, come on.
It can only be bad, wrong, fun, right?
Well, have you guys seen that documentary on Industrial Light and Magic, Lucas's company, and how it like developed and became like such a behemoth? It actually targets Jurassic Park as like one of the first. It just basically shows how they were the pioneers of CGI and all the graphics that we see now in movies. And Jurassic Park was one of the very first movies that they used their CGI technology on. So I'm sort of interested to see. I mean, obviously the CGI in this movie is going to be a billion times better than the old ones, but I think just from a nerdy, I guess, computer science sort of standpoint, I'd like to see the, compare and contrast the two, because I think it's both companies that are doing the same movie, or the same company doing both movies, I should say.
An interesting perspective, I guess. Yeah. You guys got any thoughts on that?
I'm not sure it's the CGI that anyone's going to object to about Jurassic World.
What's not to like? What more lame brain idea could you have than to actually execute on the theme park idea in this disastrous natural experiment? Like, they are opening the stupid park. That's the dumbest thing you could do. You're just setting things up for just a spectacular disaster, and that's what I look for in a Jurassic Park movie.
Well, Chris Pratt's character says it great. You invented a whole new dinosaur. Probably not a good idea.
Right, as opposed to just an abandoned island where people go, parasailing, whatever that stupid thing was in the third one. I don't know, man. I'm optimistic about it. I think it's going to be good, bad, or bad, good, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, speaking of, I guess that one would be a reboot or a reinvention?
It depends what they do with it. If it's a, remember how bad this went before, oh no, it'll be different this time, you know, then that's a reimagining, I guess, or even just a sequel. But if they're doing a, well, this is the first time this has been done.
I like to think it's going to be a revisitation.
I'm reading about it now. It's after 10 years of operation and visitor rates declining. So this thing has been happening for 10 years.
So they got the park open and people got sick of dinosaurs in 10 years.
Right, it's been open for a decade and now, you know, people are starting to not go because I guess dinosaurs are not interesting anymore.
They look fake.
Fake, that's funny.
I've seen better on TV and movies. They smell bad. So I guess they have to up the ante by inventing new horrible dinosaurs and then mayhem ensues.
Sounds like it.
I hope Jeff Goldblum like Skypes in or something and tells him it's a bad idea.
Chaos theory. It just
life will find a way.
Is character alive?
That would be awesome.
Did he die in one of the movies? I don't even remember.
No.
He died in the original book, his character.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so in the movies. I think his gymnast daughter, who they tell you is a gymnast 50 times at the beginning of the movie, like, saved his bacon.
That's right.
Oh, God. It awful doesn't even begin to describe it.
But didn't in the last one, like, it show, like, one of the, like, dinosaurs escaping or something or flying away from the island? Wasn't that like where they sort of left it open?
I thought that was a pelican flying away, wasn't it?
I don't know. If a raptor
yeah,
but
they
or something.
Did it. They did a real cool thing where they kind of focused on the pelican, but they did it at an angle that you thought it was a dinosaur at first until you realized it was a pelican, and you went, "Oh,
yeah, look at that! They're birds." But wait, was the third one the one with the Tyrannosaurus on Rodeo Drive, or was that two? Like, I get them confused. Oh, the third one was Spinosaur. Oh God, I don't want to get into this. It's going to be a great movie.
Yeah.
Keep repeating it, you'll believe it.
Well, speaking of repetition, though, I think we've beaten this theme up pretty thoroughly, and I did promise our guests that we would cut them loose after about an hour of torture, and I think we've satisfied that quota. So, Doug and Ivan, are you content to call it an episode and for us to cut you loose so you can resume your lives?
To be honest, I can talk about this forever. there's life interruptus.
right. I hear you. You got to revisit work.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before we do let you guys out the door, we will give you the floor one last time. Anything you guys want to talk about with regard to your current projects, lives, anything? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, so I would be remiss if I didn't plug my name here. So Gothic Doctor is a game that I worked on. I brought to Kickstarter last summer with a buddy of mine, John McNeil. And we are in the process of selling, approved the physical proofs, which is really cool to actually see things printed out. And so that should be fulfilling in the next few months. I've learned with Kickstarter and shipping and everything not to put a finite date on things whenever possible. But hopefully that'll be coming out soon. So that's a game where you're playing a physician in 1850s London, catering to some of those out of copyright characters like Frankenstein's monster or Dracula with Brides of Dracula, folks like that, and collecting sets from your hand in order to fulfill that and earn money for treating. So it's a fun little light card game. I think really spectacular artwork by my buddy Jeff.
I am a backer of that game, so, you know, make sure you slide mine to the front of the list when you're sending them out.
I'm also a backer of that game. I want to hand deliver it. Yeah, well, I would be happy to hand deliver it to you. I mean, it's that would save me shipping.
Cool. Well, does that pretty much wrap it up? Anything else to...
Typhoon Period is going to hit Kickstarter on February 17th, our launch date. We're going to run it for about 3 weeks. March 8th or 9th is the day that we're going to close. I forget the exact day. And we're going to be really pushing it at Dreamation, which is a convention at the end of February in northern Jersey. and PAX East, and hopefully play the heck out of it there. So yeah, if we can, our Kickstarter page is already up, the preview page is already up, so if anybody wants to go hunting for that online, we're definitely looking for feedback. There is a print and play based on the prototype that you guys got. I'll be updating that print and play before Kickstarter comes out. And our company, Nine Kingdoms, we have a lot of things planned. Since Doug came on, we've been plugging away at different designs. One of our designs is a party game, which mechanically kind of emulates, you know, all your basic party games, but it is extremely funny and generally creates, you know, heart attacks and laughter. So that, it's funny because the game kind of started as a joke, but it's called Keep Calm, and so you're put into these ridiculous and sometimes adults-only situations, and then you have to play a card that says, I will keep calm and do this to react to the situation. So we had a lot of fun, like, coming up with 1,000 cards in this game. You know, it's funny because we had this Excel file on Google Drive that we were all sharing, and you'd go on, and every couple of days there'd be new ones up there from one of the different guys, so you get a good laugh out of that.
And then in our meeting discussion, like, the minutia of fart jokes. Well, is it funnier if it's fart or shart? Are we really? Yes, we are.
Yeah, we have to cut the cards. You know, we just have too many cards about fart jokes. There's just too many. I mean, we play tested it a handful of times. Every time we play it, people just laugh. We're hoping to put that out sometime in like March or April. We're hoping to kickstart that one as well. And then beyond that, we have a card game with Doug designed. Doug, you want to talk about that just for a few minutes?
Yeah, it's a game called Gear Fire. It's an office game where your company and another company have been acquired by a much, much larger company, and they don't need both of you. So as the smartest person in your division, your inept boss has told you that you need to help him organize and make everybody look really busy so that you can stick around. So it's a light card game for two players with some deduction. You're trying to eliminate cards from the other person's hand to either get the opponent's boss fired or to get them to have to play their boss, because if you do, they'll realize how useless the boss is. That'll be the end of that unit. So,
That sounds like my life.
It's a fun little game. One of those straight up quick card games where you're just playing out cards you're done in like 10 to 15 minutes and you can play it again. Really very cool, very much one of those things you just sit down and just, you know, have a little bit of fun with. Doug is great at creating those kinds of games. Oh, shucks. And then of course the last thing that, because there's a lot of things that we have in the works, preliminary stages that we just can't talk about, but there is Always Apocalypse, which was our first game, which is a post-apocalyptic card game. And that came out, it started that June, it was delivered in December, it hit stores in February, so it's just about a year old retail-wise. We are ever working on the expansion of that. That is the world of Nine Kingdoms.
That is an impressive and feature-rich world, I think I can say without any qualification, which is maybe more than I can say for the Nerdstravaganza podcast. Well, now who am I kidding? This is about as feature-rich a podcast as you can get. Take, for example, tonight's guests. But yeah, guys, it was great having you on as our guest host, as well as talking about your projects. And you are not contractually obligated, but I think I speak for all of us when I say we would not mind having you on again in the future. So do keep us in mind.
That would be great. Absolutely. I had a good time. I had a really good time. Thanks a lot, guys, for having us on.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, it was a real pleasure having Doug and Ivan on. I assume you guys agree.
Absolutely.
Oh, I do.
Yes, I do.
And I think our audience will agree that this was an above average episode. But then again, we don't really have an average. We're a continuous slope of improving quality here on the Extravaganza podcast. And for that reason, I highly recommend that if you like this show, you subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever other podcatching software you happen to use. Write us a favorable review, give us maximum stars, or check us out on Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on Google+. And if you're really excited about being a part of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
Reboot up the browser of your choice and check us out at nerdtravaganza.com, where you can find this and all of our other back episodes. Feel free to email us at nerdtravaganza@gmail.com. And pop over to YouTube, where you'll see many of our offerings, such as video reviews, movie reviews, board game reviews, and all lots of other content that we are sure you will love.
And with all of our housekeeping out of the way, Chris, I have one last question for you. Should we reboot the podcast or not?
I'm a little confused by the question.
Done. Beautiful.
Should we stop recording, by the way?